We're live.
All right, welcome everybody. Schaefer Baseball Report Wednesday edition. I'm coming to you live from Wilmington. Todd Friedman coming from Fort Mill, and Andrew up at the Stick, a facility in North Carolina, in the Vino Bambino studio. We gotta get the Bambino some more clothes, man. Maybe I'll get him
a little baggy.
I'm gonna get him old man spring break 2024 from March to May. Because that's what I'm on, baby. I'm on spring break.
Never ending.
Never ending. But it's been phenomenal to be down here. Absolutely. I don't know if you guys can see behind me, but that's the intercoastal, and then just on the other side is the ocean. And this is my view every day. I wake up in the morning, the sun's up. It's just been amazing. Been calming. Got a lot done down here, and I just I don't know, man. It's almost like I don't want to leave. The driving range is right around the corner. I did get a serious reality check today. I never shop, right? I never shop. So two of my three grandkids are coming in today. My youngest daughter, her husband, my mother, my sister, and then my mother-in-law, and then Amanda, all coming in, and my sister's husband. So we're all piling into the house. So I went shopping, and I think, I'll go to Walmart. I'll just throw things in there. Like, I don't know. I'll run up and down every aisle. I'm not paying attention. I'm like, I like this, I like that. There's, firing it in the cart, whatever. I even bought a basketball and a soccer ball there, too, so you know.
Todd, you know how I know Shafe's getting lonely down there?
Why is that?
He invited me.
I'm out of friends, man. I ran out of friends down here. Right? I met a really good friend and he pitched in our All Star game last year. Son's Jackson Lee, but David Lee. So we've named him Danger Lee now. it's an adventure, but he is my, I tell him he's my favorite cruise director. And Dave is one that hooked me up with the house through Jim Kitts, the former NFL guy. And he's bringing fishing poles by. He's just a good dude. He's a lot of fun. And so he's my only friend here. And so what I found out that I'm his only friend because he had no friends either. So
It's a marriage made in heaven.
It is.
Well, when all these people coming down, your family, that means spring break is over.
Yeah, for the weekend. That's it. I know how to reboot. I know how to reboot. But so I go shopping, and it's like almost $300.
Oh, yeah.
Fruit. And I mean, I'm just buying ice cream cones. Like that. There was some alcohol involved in that purchase. I have to admit that, too. So. But it jacked it up. But I was like, holy cow, when I got to the counter. It was crazy. But sort of a great game last night.
Nice.
NC State and UNCW. And, I'm really, enjoying watching college baseball again.
Yeah.
We had Queens there, which was fine. And that was a struggle for them. We've watched them evolve from a club team to a Division I program. But, as much time as Andrew and I have spent there over the years, we don't want to be there all the time. So you peel out and, being down here, watching all these other teams come in, there is an amazing amount of parity in this game right now. We've seen ACC teams come in here. I've definitely seen South Carolina play this year.
Yeah.
When I was down there visiting Zach. So SEC teams, CAA, you name it, but there's some serious athletic parity in terms of the size of the athlete and the position guys.
Midweek game shape, that's where you see it the most, right?
Yeah.
Wilmington yesterday, USC Upstate, William and Mary beat Duke. It's good to see, because a lot of college athletics, you don't see that parity, right? So it's definitely encouraging.
But you are correct. Midweek is definitely different than than what's happening on the weekends in a three-game series,
and
you bring it because of the pitching and the depth of definitely the depth of the pitching. I mean, one night's one night midweek, right? So you're probably giving guys a chance that might not get there. We'll get the chance. I think more earlier in the season they allow that to happen than do. While you're in conference, why are you during the season of conference? Because you just got to keep your guys sharp and keep them prepared. And it's been fun, but and then this week, Coastal came in, who is Gary Gilmore is going to receive a Lifetime Spirit of the Game award this year at the You Deserve a Chance Foundation Home Plate Gala, which we're excited about. Our alumni there has been pretty much off the charts in terms of Tom Walter, Jack Leggett. We can go down the list. Landon Powell, Mike Schilt, Grady Little. I mean, the list is phenomenal. So, Gary getting that award is, he fits in that program. I love him. But we had him on the show. He was such a great school. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And our guest was at the game, and I got a text when I was sitting in the outfield and tried to connect physically. We didn't, because he has family members that are going to school down there, and he had to jump over and see them. But when we bring on Bobby Miranda, Coach Mo, Bobby Mo, Momo.
I don't think you call him that.
He has to call Momo. I want to know what his wife calls him. That's what I want to know. That's the true nickname in the whole thing.
That's right.
But yeah, it's been good. And then you've been out there watching Catawba Ridge and you got to see probably one of the best arms in the country in Caden Glauber.
I mean, listen, he's a sophomore, but even the leap and the jumps he made from last year to this year, it's pretty significant. I mean, obviously he's got the pedigree with his dad pitching in the big leagues, but he's going to be probably one of those top guys by his senior year, and who knows, about the draft or going to college or what have you. But he's on that trajectory for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch. We saw that a year ago, a couple of years ago, actually. What was it, 3 years ago, Andrew? Then 2 years ago when he came up with us, and then
3 years ago he came at the NTIS. Right. That's the first time we saw him.
And then he pitched for us for a couple seasons, but he needed to be on a bigger platform than what we were providing as far as tournaments. We're always conscious of what it costs for families to travel all over the place, and the big events are all over the country and people have to go to them, and it's just not there's never been in our makeup to pack our guys up and go to Texas or go to Alabama or something like that. We stay local and we banged it out here. And how's Mason's club doing?
Yeah. So we had 2 weeks off because of spring break, but the Legacy 10U boys will be back in action this weekend. So excited for that as well. It's funny, you watch we watch a ton of college baseball,
right,
high school baseball, and you're looking at the 10U. It's like you see that whole matriculation process, and it's wild. But it's funny. Some of the same mistakes are made at a 10U level than a college level. Like it's double cuts, like not being where you're supposed to be on a backup, not understanding what you're doing on a bunt defense. Like it's like this stuff happens for 20-year-olds just like it does for 10-year-olds.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because I get it at 10. It shouldn't be happening with 20-year-olds.
No.
That's always a piece that we discuss. It's just, the instincts for the game and the actual understanding of how the game is supposed to be played, it's almost non-existent. It's unfortunate for some of these college guys too, because they're recruiting this talent, and the talent looks good in a combine, and then you put them in a game scenario and there's no execution and no understanding where to be and how to go. And so I think the game has lost that. It's one of the questions that I'm going to ask Bobby is, since he made the transition, since he left the game, what's missing from the game? What do you see that's changed in the game that needs to be back in the game? All good. So if you want to roll out, we'll bring in Coach Mo, Bobby Mo, Momo, the whole program here. All right. So I'm gonna run down this list, and Bobby, you have to sit back and you have to listen real quick, okay? And don't blush, because this is pretty special stuff and what you've done in the game. And, we're appreciative of the time that you've put in all different levels for us. And there's not many that do it, and continuously enhancing wherever you're at in the game. So first, 35 years college coaching, 18 years ACC coach, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, Virginia. 2 trips to the College World Series, 6 ACC championships, 6 first round picks, 30 MLB players, 2 MLB world champions, 15 years head coach of Western Carolina, 3 SoCon championships, assistant to the Team USA development program. Here's the cool part. Now, this is where it gets cool. This is, and remember, this is a child of the 70s, right? So when he's all done, he finds himself up on a mountain. But he's not like a Tibetan guy. He's not like in a robe or anything. He's got a ski helmet on and goggles. He is now a professional ski instructor. He's certified. That's good to know because if I'm going up on the mountain, you better be certified. You're not like, hey, I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express and I'm going to teach you how to ski today. Okay. All right. College baseball and analyst for ESPN NCAA tournament, SEC Network, ACC Network, ESPNU. And then we're going to dive into some metric stuff, a very cool program that Bobby's put together. It's called OTZ, Own the Zone. It's Bobby's brainchild, and he sent it over this morning. What's cool about it, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure this out. This is the generic. This is the basics that we've all known and we've all built our games and our coaching philosophies around, and there's no overload to it. And it is spitting out incredibly accurate information on teams. So, Bobby Mo, you're on, man. It's your turn. So welcome to the Schaefer Baseball Report.
Hey, Andrew, Todd, Schaefer, really appreciate you guys having me on here. It's an honor to be here today. And, wow, that was pretty amazing. Man, Schaefer, you're pretty good at this.
I just have way too much caffeine today, man. Way too much caffeine.
Bob, you gotta look. You gotta look at Schaefer's note sheet. He has a sheet where he boxes everything out for the particular week. So I think he did a good job with yours.
I'm a visual processor. Absolute visual processor.
I love it. It's awesome. So beautiful, man. Schaefer, you're beautiful. We go way back, and. Yep. You know, it's just awesome seeing your face, talking to you last week when I was in Wilmington over the phone. But the wife and the kids, they dragged me away from that game. I just came over to see Gilly, you know, get that award and Scaff and, you know, Hoodie and those guys. And Bev, who's the pitching coach, former Catamount at Coastal and stuff. So, yeah, it was an awesome day, man. Awesome day.
What was really fun about last night, I let Todd jump in, is I got to sit up in the stands with Coach Scaff. And it is an absolute treat to sit with old school baseball guys, you know, because we watch the game different. I mean, we're watching the game. If you look in the stands, more than half the people aren't even paying attention. You know, it's an entertainment thing. But talking the strategy and the release points, and it was a treat. I don't like to sit back there. You know what I mean? I like to kind of just stay away and observe from a different perspective. But that was special last night.
I was watching BP and Hoodie goes, I think Schaefer's up there on the hill somewhere back there or whatever. So then I'm like, all right, let me try to track him down later. I was looking for you. I needed some binoculars or whatever. You're up there on the berm.
I am.
You know, walking around. I'll tell you a funny story about Schaefer real quick. I mean, about Mark Scaff real quick. Oh. Mark Scaff. We were roommates. We were roommates in a dorm at Old Dominion for baseball camp in 1989. It was Chris Finwood. Chris Finwood, myself, and Mark Scaff were all in the same room, which was 4 o'clock in the morning every night talking baseball with Tony Guzzo, who was also in that camp.
Wow.
Legend at VCU. So that was an amazing experience at 24 years old, I guess, something like that. It's just nuts.
Well, that's another part. I'm gonna let Todd jump in a minute, but the things that we're missing, because that's what we did, as players, last guy to leave the locker room. Obviously, there was a case of beer or something in there. And you just sat in there and you just talked. And I got to sit around some of the most amazing baseball minds in the world. Because once the locker room cleared out, then the managers rolled out. Or people rolled in there that just – and it was all about talking about the game. I mean, and then, you went back to sleep and you got up and did it the next day.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Love it.
Awesome.
All right, Todd.
Awesome. No, Coach Mo, so before we kind of get into what you're doing now and obviously your coaching career, we always want to know like how this whole journey started for Bobby Miranda, right? Went to Eastern Kentucky, played there, started your coaching career there. When did you know you wanted to become a college coach and kind of take the avenue that you did?
I had no desire to be a college coach. It's crazy. I was one of these baseball guys, and it's funny, Sam Hoberg, who will be a Hall of Fame umpire, is a college teammate of mine. He tells this story all the time about the guys coming back from the bars at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday night at Eastern Kentucky, and they're hearing ping, ding, ding, you know, on the tennis court, and I'm over there hitting off a tee at 2 a.m. I was one of those guys, you know, just crazy, just nuts, you know, had my tee in my coach's office in high school, you know, hitting between classes, stuff like that. So I was always that guy, but I wanted to be a player, you know, I wanted to play professional baseball and play in the big leagues. And then when I wasn't drafted out of college and played for, you know, at the time, a top 30 program at Eastern Kentucky in the 80s, Jim Ward, who is a Hall of Fame coach, just blessed to be with that man, you know, in his system and the coaches that he's put out. I was actually in the real world for about a month and a half, and we talked on the phone, and he goes, "Hey, how's the real world treating you?" And I go, "Man, I can't stand it. I miss baseball." Yeah. And he goes, "You need to come down here and you need to be one of my assistant coaches." And back then, and Shafe, you know this, in the 80s, 70s, 80s, stuff like that, there really wasn't full-time assistant coaches at a lot of places. It was mostly GAs. So guys were in grad school and that was your staff. And then you would be in grad school for like 3 years, 2 years, and then you'd move on and try to get a job coaching high school or possibly, you know, a part-time job, even at Chapel Hill, maybe making $10,000 a year or something like that. So I go down there and I just quit my job the next day, go down there and I talk a player that was always getting in trouble that was on the team the year before, said, "Hey man, you're always in trouble. You got a single dorm room. Let me sleep on the floor in a sleeping bag and I'll give Coach Ward good reports on your behavior." And he took the deal.
Nice.
He took the deal. So I slept on the floor and they smuggled some food out of the athletic training table for me. That's how I survived that first year. And then I applied for grad school and got my master's and coached with Coach Ward for 2 years. And we won another championship there in 89. And then I left and went to Virginia for a whopping $10,000 a year as the head assistant in the ACC at UVA at 24. That's awesome. Because nobody wanted the job, trust me. Nobody else wanted the job.
Well, I mean, you know, you look at coaching now. I mean, to go from – and listen, EKU is a very good mid-major school, and you know, but getting up to that ACC level, I mean, pretty quickly for you, that's pretty – you know, that's obviously – you know, probably you don't see that much now. You know, tell us about each spot, you know, because you know, that kind of gets you to where you – you know, you get to, you know, Western Carolina as a head coach, but tell us a little bit about UVA Wake and Georgia Tech.
So honored to play at Eastern Kentucky. I mean, three championships, you know, while we were there, NCAA regionals, got a taste of all that. And played for a Hall of Fame coach. So then was hired by Coach Womack, who is now a Hall of Famer at UVA, legend. And he had very limited resources. We probably had the worst facility, not probably, we did. And Shafe, you know this, you've probably seen it. We had the worst facility in the country in the 90s. And we had 6 scholarships and everyone in the league had 13 in the ACC. So it was a very difficult job. Nobody really wanted the job, got the job, making 10 grand a year with no benefits, by the way. And, you know, did that, worked on that. Thought I could just take the EKU system into the ACC and we would start winning championships like we did in college. And I was so dead wrong. I was clueless, had no idea what I was doing. And Coach Wilhelm, year two I was there, they were 60-6, if you remember. Clemson had a team that was 60-6 going into the College World Series. And we would always play those guys tough because UVA, even though we had bad facilities, we had no budget, all that kind of stuff, we still had really – talented pitching more than anything because we had a great school. We had a great university, so we could attract some really good players and we attracted some big leaguers, you know, by the way, stuff like that, even without a facility and without a budget, but it wasn't quite enough. And Coach Wilhelm, I grabbed him during BP at like 26 years old, something like that. And I said, "Hey," I said, "I want to come down in the fall and I want your training method. I want your weight room. I want your bullpens, I want your BP, I want your practice plans, I want everything. Can I come down for a weekend and just hang with you?" He started laughing at me. He was probably like 60-something years old at the time. And I go, "What are you laughing at, old man?" I love the guy. And he was fantastic, Coach Wilhelm. And he goes, Bobby, he goes, you want to be a great college baseball coach? Yes, I do. You want to win in college baseball? Yes, I do. He goes, recruit great players. And it's like the light bulb just went totally off in my head to where I go, is that it? And he goes, pretty much. That's exactly what he said. And I went, wow, I've been sitting here thinking the drill could make the Division III talent an ACC champion. And it's just, you know, our coaching has a lot to do with a lot of things. But if you don't have the players, you know, it's very difficult to win at a high level, you know, like the ACC. So I started hitting the road, man. I started getting out in the car and driving around, and I'd be gone. I was single at the time, 25 straight days going up through Pennsylvania, New Jersey, whatever. And, you know, we were just blessed to get some great players together. That 96 team, you know, won the ACC championship with very limited resources. Finished 11th in the country.
Bobby, you had limited resources in terms of where you were going to see the players too. That was total network, right? I mean,
oh, it was sleeping in my car. Sleeping in my car, living, you know, staying with friends. There was no getting on a plane and flying somewhere. It was all basically networking, like you're saying, Shafe, and, you know, just, hey, can I stay at your house? Hey, this is a former player's parents. Can I stay at your house? That's how we got it done. Yeah. And you actually made more money off took the fundraise money. Coach Womack would say, hey, we'll pay you out of fundraising so you can go recruiting. And that's how, you know, you survive basically. It's just a crazy, crazy thing. I was with Brian O'Connor 2 weeks ago. I did the Wake Forest, 3 weeks ago, Wake Forest, Virginia series on, ACC Network, I guess. And we sat down after the series for an hour. We were just laughing about, he was making $25,000 a year at Notre Dame as the associate head coach, and Paul Mineri was making $50,000 at Notre Dame, and they were going to Omaha. We used to go on the road together all the time, and we would stay together because we were trying to save money for our budgets, or we'd stay with friends. You know, that's how different it's become. And, you know, we were basically sitting there looking out over the stadium, and we were actually tearing up because we were looking at what he's achieved there, what he's done compared to what it was. And I'm actually got goosebumps right now thinking about it. And Brian, I'm so proud of him, and Mac and those guys. Incredible, incredible where it's come from. And Coach Womack started all that. People don't realize he fundraised to start that stadium, the first design of it, and they got it in place. And then he retired, and then Brian took over, and, you know, the rest is history. Brian told me the first day he got the job, he called me. I'll never forget this. He goes, Bobby, my recruiting budget just went from $2,500. That's what we had, $2,500 total recruiting budget, to $60,000 the day he took the job. Now, that was big in 2003.
Wow, huge.
And so he went from, you know, six scholarships to fully funded day one. So that helped. And then he built it from there, you know, and did an unbelievable job. And obviously he's, you know, one of the greatest of all time now. So that's Virginia. You want to know about like Wake and all that real quick?
Before you start on Wake, I have a really good fun fact about Wake Forest baseball.
Sure.
Todd Friedman's first collegiate home run was versus Wake Forest. And Bobby Miranda was the assistant coach.
Where were you at?
Winthrop, 99.
No way.
Yep.
Wow.
First home run. Yep. Yeah. It was 35 degrees at your stadium, freezing. There was no one in the stands except for my father. Drove down from New Jersey and saw my first. Yeah. Yeah. Still, I saw the ball. I have the ball in my other room, right? Yeah.
Do you know who you
are? But to have your dad there. For the
yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it was great.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Who did you hit that off?
How hard was the wind blowing out that day?
You know, the pitcher, oh gosh, it wasn't McDougal, I know that. I can't remember, but yeah, it was, the wind was blowing out, definitely. I got a little help. But yeah, always remember that. That was pretty amazing.
Isn't it amazing, the longer in the game, how things connect? One way or another.
Yeah,
I mean, it's small.
It gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
It's crazy.
It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome, you know, Todd.
Yeah, I saw. I was like, yeah, Bobby was there. I gotta say that. So yeah,
I was there, and it's called the pitch too, by the way. So I just, you know,
appreciate it.
Because Mo knew he wanted to be on this show someday.
That's right. I was like, that was my time.
You know what's amazing? Eric Backage gives me the same type of story.
Yeah.
They were trying to, you know, and Keith LeClair was a friend of mine, and they were trying to build that program at East Carolina. He just left Western Carolina. Yep. And, you know, we scheduled him for a midweek. Well, they came in as a midweek, and they weren't even like the program yet, you know, that they are now and what he built it into. And they actually beat McDougal on a midweek.
Wow.
We brought McDougal in relief. And I believe Eric, I don't know if 100%, but I think he hit the home run.
Oh wow!
In that game, and they beat us like 3-2 on a midweek Wednesday, you know. And he tells that story all the time about how nasty McDougal was. You know, everybody comes up to him. I don't know if you remember McDougal, man. The guy threw 102 in the big leagues, and he had a 91-mile-an-hour slider, and he was ahead of his time. You know, I think nowadays he'd be a starter in the big leagues, whereas probably back in the day, you know, Shea, it took those 100-mile-an-hour guys like Hugh Gossage and him, and just threw him in the pen and made him a closer. Yep. He was an all-star closer, but he'd be a household name, I think, if he were a starter. Because when he was a starter, he would settle in at like 94 to 97. He wouldn't try to overthrow, and he would pitch, you know. So, but as a closer, he had told me several times, he's like, I call him, how you doing? He goes, I just throw it as hard as I can. That's all I did. I just throw it as hard as I can.
Hey,
I can't wait for us to get to the OTZ, because that's today, man. Max effort, throw hard, reach back and go.
And we can get into injuries too, because that's the big topic nowadays. That's why everybody's getting hurt. In my, you know, anyway, I think it's the training personally. That's in my opinion, but anyway, we'll get into that later.
I'm 100% with you on that. I think they're overtrained. I think that's what happened to running and, you know, just, you know, building endurance and letting your body, long lean muscles. There's a lot to it. There is.
Yeah. We're getting to that later. That transition up from that. And you and I saw this over 35 years it's amazing. And now they are throwing harder, but they're getting hurt.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. So, anyway. So let's jump on, because we can sit here and talk about every stop you've been. But you know that. So you decide to hang them up at 15 years at Western. Time to do something different. Where's the ski part come in now? You know, did you grow up in that, or just like, okay, this is
so,
my bucket list? Because
everyone's like, ski instructor, Jackson Hole. Wow, you know, Jan Targi, you know, you must have been a rich silver spoon kid or something. But no, blue collar, you know, my dad has an eighth grade education. God bless him. Greatest man I ever met in my life. 11 brothers and sisters. He had to quit school in the eighth grade to help feed them. Depression baby, you know, that kind of guy. And we're blue collar people from the Chicago area. Suburbs. And my mom went to a garage sale when I was 7 years old and found this 35-year-old pair of skis. They're wooden with like the wire binding, leather lace-up boots.
Yeah.
She bought them for $5 at a garage sale when I was 7. She brought them and said, hey, here you go, Bobby. This is your Christmas present, you know, for $5 bucks. And I just went in the backyard and I went to the local sledding hill and taught myself how to ski. And I had an uncle that skied a little bit, so we went and skied a little bit. 250-foot vertical drop, Wilmot Mountain in Wisconsin. Awful, like the worst, the ghetto of skiing. And my dream was always to go out west. I never made it out west till I was 32. But I started skiing, and I started skiing. You're not going to believe this. I was on skis probably 40 to 50 days a winter in the 70s growing up. Because it was $7 a lift ticket. And my dad said, you could save up all summer. And I cut grass, shovel snow, whatever. And I'd save about $500 and I'd pay for my own lift tickets. My dad would take me there, drop me off, stay, whatever, when I was a little kid, and fell in love with it. And then, the goal always was to get into the ski industry, when I got out of baseball. And I've been wanting to do that for, you're talking to my wife, for like 15 years, really. But I was just too young, and so applied and had to go try out. They were like, you're crazy. You're from Chicago, from, you know, live in North Carolina. You know, this is the SEC of skiing. The Tetons are the – and so I tried out. I made the team, and I've been doing that for 2 years, and I do guiding. I do early up powder, and I do advanced lessons. I, you know, just kind of doing it all. I started off with the Never Evers, you know, doing beginners and kind of worked my way up, and – I did year two, and now I'm going back for year three. They just hired me yesterday, actually. I got an email from Grand Targhee Resort. And so, yeah, it's really a thrill. Wake up every day and put your skis on and go to work. And have a great respect for that industry and how hard those people work. And it's truly amazing. And then the ESPN stuff, that was another goal.
Now you're in the booth, you're out of uniform, different perspective from the dugout, having to watch the game, having to analyze the game from there, because how we analyze games as coaches and managers has to be different than sitting up in the booth, because there has to be some parity there, right? I mean, you can't, but does the adrenaline still go at times?
Yeah, it's just the excitement of being around the players before and the coaches. That's the thing I really, really enjoy, is getting on the field for BP and talking to everybody and interacting. Because, us baseball people have that language that within a sentence or two, you know whether that person's been around the game all their life or not, right? we all have that fraternity and we click with each other. And that's the fun part. But watching the games, analyzing the games, it's been really spectacular. I was honored to do the Wake Forest regional. They were number one in the tournament going into the NCAA tournament last year. And boy, it was just really cool watching the talent and watching them go through the tournament, get to Omaha and stuff like that. And then I was allowed to go out to Omaha last year and observe some things. And that was really cool too. So yeah, I'm just a rookie in that business, trying to break in, trying to get more what they call hits. Those are jobs. And, but it's just a true blessing, and I'm an honor. I just really, really love the game. I want to grow the game, help grow the game. I want to just do everything I can to give back to the game that, it's really given me everything. I mean, no one in my family ever went to college. I only reason I went to college is because of baseball. Baseball's done everything for me. I met my wife through baseball. It's the greatest thing of all time. It's the greatest game of all time. And the people, we all are talking right now. We all love it. It's in our blood, and there's nothing better.
Have you, how many phone numbers do you think you have in your phone?
Me?
Yeah.
Almost 4,000.
4,000? How many? Yeah, what's the percentage of those that are from baseball?
Oh, gosh. I want to say 95% probably.
Exactly. I've done that when 3 years ago when I stroked out. I was in the hospital. I started scrolling through my phone, and it's amazing because if you go through your phone, you see your whole life, right? Yeah. You got numbers from when you were kids and all that other stuff. And it was the same thing that came back. And the other people that weren't was like, a doctor, a lawyer, or, some number. I don't know how that got in there. But it's amazing that I always say, Bobby and Andrew and Todd will agree that we say this all the time. The wins and losses, the records and everything we read off is cool, right? But that led to all these people that we know and all these things that we get to do because of this game. And it's at times it kicks us in the ass, right? We hate it. And then other times we just, we're absolutely enamored with it. But in the end, the lessons and the people are just amazing. And, to try and explain that to kids today, again, somebody probably tried to explain it to us. I'm like, yeah, whatever, but I'm here to play the game, and that's it.
Shafe, that's an unbelievable point. I do want to say this to young coaches and players and everybody out there, because now I'm almost 60. That's an unbelievable point. When I got in the game, my whole thing was, when I started coaching, Todd, you said coaching. Yeah. I said to myself, hey, I just want to win a championship. Oh, can I just get a player drafted? And then it was, hey, can I just get a player to the big leagues? Hey, can I just do this? And I didn't realize all that BS, man. It really is. I hate to say it. It's great. It's cool. But it's not what it's all about. Like, the older you get, the more you realize. And the old timers used to tell us this, Jake. You know what I'm talking about. It's all about the relationships in the game that you make with your players, your coaches, your teammates. That's why the transfer portal kind of bothers me a little bit. I feel like the relationship side of the transfer portal it really will affect the game. How can you be as close as a teammate when you're bouncing around program to program?
When you're sitting in the dugout and you're not playing, what goes through your head now? It's I got to get out of here. I can go somewhere. Right. I can do something. And during the season,
right?
You lose loyalty, and you lose that identity from the school that you went to. And I got a thread of, probably 20 Terps, 20 Maryland guys that I went to school with. I can't even believe that they have jobs because it dings all day long just going at each other. But that's something that's lost.
It's funny, Bobby. One of the questions that I actually had was about that. It's like, I'm looking through your Twitter account and your life is about relationships. I can tell about all the videos that are on there and the portal has really it's my question right here is really destroyed that aspect of college coaching. I mean, what is the NCAA going to do? I mean, I know you're not, you're kind of still in the circle, working for ESPN and coaching for a long period of time. Does the NCAA look at this and say, we have a problem here, or is it just kind of like, it's only going to get worse?
It's a great question. Great question, Todd. And I won't name any names.
Come on. The
two prominent coaches that I talked to last year about this in length that have used the transfer portal to benefit their programs at the highest possible level, they're not into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, the best of the best, and I respect in the game, and you can who these guys are. And I'm talking ACC, SEC guys, they don't like the portal. Okay. But they all to a man say, well, I have to use it because I have to compete. This is my job. This is what I do for a living. So they're doing it, yet they're not into it. Does that make sense? So it is out of control. To a man, every coach I talk to, they say it's out of control.
Yeah.
Out of control.
Perfect point. Right. So it goes to the flip side too. Unfortunately, it's a tool that the player could use now as well.
Right.
Right. So it's not only the coaches that have to take advantage. If it's out there and somebody else, I'm going to use this parallel and, knock on wood, thank God I never went down that road, but it was like when I was playing and steroids came out. Right. And it's there, it's available. So you have a choice to use it and not use it. And, fortunately I didn't, and I'm happy I didn't. I can say that with clear conscience for the rest of my life. I was in that era, but I didn't. But now it's, but the choice is there for a player. And how could you not think about, but what the explanation to a player is, it doesn't work that way all the time for everybody. You can enter that portal with 4,000 guys and who are you? They even know you. Like, now what do you do? Now you put yourself in a situation. And it's sad because it's a part, because there's a reality of life, right? I mean, you got to earn your way in the business world. So you got to earn your way onto the field here, and you got to pay your dues, and you got to put your time in. And these guys come out of high school with all the social media, all this attention, all this, blah blah blah, and they think they're going to walk into a college environment and be that guy. Now listen, we've seen guys that can do it, no doubt about it, and we see guys that can do it that don't get a chance to play because it's not their time. But now they're not playing, and they think, well, I'm going to go down the road tomorrow. Now, get it. Granted, listen, if there is issues with the head coach or there's issues for other reasons, family, things like that, there are reasons that it's beneficial, no doubt.
Yeah.
But loss of loyalty, loss of camaraderie with your teammates, pride in the uniform that you have on for the next 4 years, your alumni, you're coming back. Some of these guys can be alumni of three schools.
Right.
Okay, I'm off the block. I'm off the box.
Yeah. Well, Coach Leggett and I talked about this in length about a week ago. One of my best friends out there, and we had a long talk about it. And we talk about adversity, as coaches all the time, right? And adversity is preparation for greatness. Well, now my point to Coach Leggett to Seven was adversity is the transfer portal. You know what I mean? Like, a little adversity. Like, how many times, to your point, Shafe, one freshman maybe or two a program per year are making a huge impact if you're lucky in college baseball. One.
Yep.
Okay, recruiting class of 10, one. Most of the time you see those guys progress over time and they develop and they become a great player. Kavaris Tears, I had the Ole Miss Tennessee weekend 2 weeks ago. He is hitting four something. He's one of the top hitters in the country right now. 2 years ago, he wasn't even starting for Tennessee on that really good team in 22. He played a little bit, but he hung in there. And look what he's doing now. He's hitting four hole for, like, I think the fourth-ranked team in the country. So that's what you want, I believe. That's the best of college baseball and college athletics is that development process instead of just bouncing and bouncing and whatever.
So. Yeah, it is where you are today, depending on the program, right? But in reality, it's not where you are today. It's where you're going to be when you're a junior. If you're looking for pro ball, if you're looking to be drafted, because you know kids step on the field as juniors and they take over the season and they're draftable. You know, right. So you know they think the clock is running out on them if they're not playing right away, and it's not the case. And you know, you keep working, like you said. That's,
agreed.
And really, it's not adversity. It's life, right? Here's another lesson. From
exactly.
The pay your dues. Yeah. Don't give up. Continue to work hard and see where this thing gets you.
Exactly.
And it'll take care of itself.
And the portal is a compounding thing because you not just have players that are struggling going in the portal. You have players that are doing well that go in the portal that want something better. They're looking for NIL. They're looking for other things. So
that's the flip side.
You're talking about thousands of players going in this portal that realistically, some of them are in great shape. They don't need to, right? So that's the biggest problem.
Mid-major baseball is now the junior college.
Is the recruiting. You can recruit. During the season. I mean, you can have somebody say something to somebody else. There's no regulation to be going, hey, Todd, you want to come over here and play for us? I got 50 grand for you to come over here, 100 grand. Well,
Bobby said it's a JUCO of, you know, I mean, it is. It's exactly what it is.
So, yeah. Bobby, I see the game like the Power Fives becoming the big leagues and then everything else becoming the minor leagues, right? And again, there's mid-majors in there. Like the Coastals, like the UNCWs, like the Campbells and stuff like that fit into that realm. But everything else is going to be the filter up, right? And everybody's going to be trying to get out of the bottom. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to a Division III or Division II school. But in my mind, before I even signed and went there, is I only want to be here for 1 year.
Right.
Sad. It's a sad scenario. Really it's not college sports anymore. It's not, you know, the underdog, the losing. So at that point, it changes the dynamic of development, right? Because I'm a lower level school. I'm really going to develop these kids because they're going to jump on me. I just got to go out and put a lineup out there, and hopefully we win. And there's no effort to put into the development.
And to circle back, it changes the definition of that, like we talked about earlier, the relationships, the development of the relationships. I believe. I mean, it has to, right? There's no way if you don't spend – a relationship's all about time.
Yeah.
You've got to spend time with people to create a real relationship.
Yep.
So how are you going to create that kind of time?
Yeah.
You know, and then relationships that are real, you go through adversity, you go through tough times with that person. Or, you know, just like we were saying, coaching, you know, we finished 2-22 1 year in the ACC at Virginia, you know, and we won the league. You know, I've been on both ends of it. It's most important is grinding through that, you know, same thing at Western. We were the worst in the league. We've been best, you know, it's about grinding through that and getting to the other side. And that's what life's all about. And that's what, you know, developing these leaders, these great husbands, these men, you know, they don't just duck out when things are going tough, you know, they hang in there and grind. And, you know, that's life, right? So,
hey, Andrew, you're sitting there silent. Andrew's a Western Carolina alum.
Oh, I was going to ask a Western Carolina.
Let's go. Catamount.
Go Cat.
JT Poston.
Absolutely.
After Augusta this week.
Yeah. I played a couple rounds with him when I was there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Andrew's
a pretty good golfer.
Yeah, Andrew's don't let him fool you, Bobby.
Yeah, don't let him play a couple rounds.
Ringer.
No, I'm all right. No, I mean, the question about the transfer portal, this is for everyone. I mean, is there a stat year in and year out that we see who gets left in the portal and who's made it successfully out?
That's a great question. I've heard, what's it, 1 year, and I might be wrong on this number, there was 30 over all the sports. There was 33,000 kids in there, something like that. couple years ago or whatever.
That's the whole number of people that come out of high school, right around that number.
That's madness.
That are going to.
Yeah.
33,000 roster spots in college.
Oh, there's a lot that do not come out that have I mean,
so I think that would be a good statistic to find, or someone.
I'd love to know that number. I don't know if that number was right, but I heard a high number. I don't know what it was, but in all sports,
amazing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So,
go ahead, Chase.
Well, let's get into this the meat here of we've talked about the portal. Obviously, that's been a bone of contention. We've talked about the NIL a little bit. You know, now metrics have just – sabermetrics just took over the game for a period of time, and it made the game ugly. And I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to get lambasted for it, but it put people in the game that don't belong in the game, analyzing players. And you're talking about relationships and building and understanding your players and developing guys, and then all of a sudden people are coming in with these metrics saying, no, this guy can't play, that guy has to play, or he's not recruitable or he's not draftable. I hate that part. You know, because I always think that, you know, the artist's eye is the greatest eye out there, right? And as baseball men, that's we see talent that other people don't see. We see things that, others don't see, but, it's based on numbers. But with that said, numbers have always been involved in the game. And, we did spray charts, right, Bobby? I kept my own spray chart in college. I had my own little notebook, and I knew where I was hitting the ball. I knew what I was doing. I knew what pitch I was hitting it on and what count I was hitting it on. And I had 3 or 4 years of, 3 years at Maryland that, I had these books. So, and obviously I carried them forward, but we had people in pro ball that were keeping the spray charts for us. But you've come up with a system called OTZ, Own the Zone. It's amazing because we're watching all these big velo guys now, right? You're talking about consistently in the 90s. If you're not throwing 90, they aren't really looked at. I watched a kid last night from NC State come in and shut down UNCW after we did some damage that just caught. Breaking ball, slide, change it. Probably high 80s, low 90s, maybe low 90s fastball, but set it up, gone, right? But he threw strikes, and he had guys chasing with two strikes on him that weren't even competitive pitches because, he had set him up and he learned how to pitch. So now take us through the, first of all, why you went to the OTZ, because you're sitting there watching walk. It has to be, big arms, just walking guys all over the place, heavy 3-2 counts, heavy, pitching behind the whole time. And here we are, you send this to us this morning, Own the Zone. So tell us about Own the Zone.
Okay. So first off, I agree with everything you just said right there. I mean, that was very accurate, old school, new school statement. I think it's a combination. I feel like the best organizations out there, they combined the old school brains, like the Braves. I mean, look at Snicker, right? He's been around the game. They combine, those guys with the analytics, and they mirror those together. That's a great union. But the people that are in the game that just want to do numbers, that doesn't work. Look at Dusty Baker with the Astros. They combine the old school with, look at the Rangers right now.
Both
same deal.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So they're combining old and new. And I was doing some stuff, with ESPN for the tournament. I was trying to help my buddy Mike Rooney. I was like, man, how can I get, as he's doing the selection show and all that stuff, I was like, man, I'm going to try to figure out a way to figure out who the actual best teams are in the country without RPI. And I thought RPI for me, going through it as a coach over the 35 years, I thought it was a little bit overrated, and I thought it wasn't as accurate as it could be. So I was thinking, okay, the freebie war, walks, hit batters, errors and stolen bases, did that for many, many years. That wasn't quite accurate enough. So I'm sitting there for like a week and I'm just throwing all these different combinations and formulas out there. And finally, about 4 o'clock in the morning, after three straight days until like 3-4 in the morning, I'm obsessed with this. I've got to come up with something. Came up with this Own the Zone. And Own the Zone is basically super simple. A lot of people think it's super complex. Like, I don't understand what's going on with this. Shay, if you hit it right off, it's so simple. It's basically evaluating your team's performance in the strike zone versus your opponents. That's all it is. And the way we do that is strikeouts, walks, hit batters, and slugging. And those four categories are basically evaluating your performance in the strike zone. How well do your pitchers do against other people's hitters in striking them out? And how well do your hitters do against other people's pitchers in not striking out? How well do you walk versus how many guys do you walk? It's an offense and defense differential. Slug versus slug. And if you look in the big leagues, they talk about reliever OPS. They want to know, because that has slug in there, they want to know, are you giving up home runs, doubles, triples, stuff like that? If you prevent that and you produce that, that's the secret sauce. That was the magic thing that came up, is slug is the secret sauce to winning. So started plugging this in, and I was like, you know, let me look at Ole Miss's run in 2022, I guess it was. Why did they win the national championship when they were the last team in? So started running their numbers, started looking at it. And 643 helped me out. Luke at 643 is their lead analyst. I had access to him, you know, working for ESPN. So we started playing around with some stuff. All they did to make their run, because if you're even with your opponent, okay, so think about it this way. If your differentials are even in strikeouts, walks, hit batters, and slug, you're basically going to Vegas and flipping a coin whether or not you're going to win. You're just at the slot machine, just boom, and you're 50-50. So you guys are an even team in the strike zone. Does that make sense to everybody? And that's what they were. So what were they? They were a 500 ball club or sub-500 ball club right around there in the SEC. Well, they slugged at a high level, like 465 as a team, 480 maybe. But their pitchers also gave up slug at a 460 clip. Everything else was at a high level. They were in the pluses in walks, pluses in strikeout, pluses in HBP. But they are really bad in slug as far as their pitchers. Well, in the tournament, they got in the tournament and they changed that. They flipped the script on slug. They dropped their opponent's slug down 200 points.
Wow.
And they went on to be the national champion. Dropping their slug 200 points, everything else stayed the same. Everything else they did at a high level, but their slug, they changed it. And I was like, oh my gosh, we found the secret sauce. This is it. I was getting excited. I'm on the phone with Mike Bianco. I'm on the phone with his SID. I mean, we were going back and forth, and I'm like, boom. Started running the numbers. And it came up, wow, the tournament, the selection show, the top 30 teams that were selected, the top 30 OTZ teams, 25 were in the tournament, okay? The super regionals, 8 out of 8 were predicted by their OTZ number. The higher OTZ number went on to Omaha, okay? The final 3 top OTZs in Omaha were in the final 3, Wake Forest, LSU, and Florida. They made it to the final 3 in Omaha. And then once Wake Forest, who led the country in OTZ last year, by the way, they were the number 1 team going into the tournament. They had a 12.1 OTZ going into the tournament last year. Once they lost in Omaha to LSU, LSU was going to win. I was there. I was at the get those games. I was like, boom. Hate to say this because Kevin O'Sullivan is my former player, and I love him. I want him to win the worst way. But Jay Johnson was going to win the national championship, and OTZ predicted that because they were second in the country going into that tournament. So it's been absolutely amazing so far this year. Been running the numbers, and it's just blowing me away. If you win the strike zone, you will have a better chance to win the game, win your league, whatever you want to do. And right now, and then you can start asking some questions, Arkansas is winning their division in the SEC. Kentucky's winning their division in the SEC. Guess who's 1-2 in the SEC in OTZ? Kentucky's 1. Arkansas is 2. Arkansas is ranked number 1 in the country overall right now. And they are number 1 in the country in OTZ right now overall for their entire season. Interesting. It just blows me away. If you're talking about all this other stuff, it's all about this. Exactly. It's all about the strike zone. If you win the strike zone, and here's what's crazy. I've been texting this to several friends of mine in the SEC and the ACC. They're on it.
You only share with the big dogs. Is that how that goes?
Well, Hoodie knows it now. I'm just.
All right. Okay. All right.
And I've got all your numbers for your CAA. I ran them off. I can tell you the CAA here in a second.
Bobby, is this something that schools actually reach out to you about? Is this a metric or a data point that's, I mean, because it's obviously the proof's in the pudding. So, I mean, is this something that you're not doing consulting work for, but having a lot of reach out for?
They are now. Yep. So this is all new. Think about this. This just started about May 15th last year. And this is a whole new deal. And I was like, well, are we getting lucky in this first run? Or is there something to this? And then we've been doing it throughout the season from week maybe three on, because you got to get some data. And today we just ran our first conference, because now we have enough conference inventory of games. And the conference is matching up quite nicely too. So, yeah, I'm getting a text about every Monday or Tuesday from, you know, some guys that I really respect in the game, in the college game. And they're like, hey, what's our number? And now I'm starting to put it out on social media, and, you know, hopefully it'll take, you know, and go from there. But I'm just excited about it. Because it's just really, really simple. Like Shafe says, it's really simple, but it's very accurate. And it's super important for your kids to know that, I think, of what's important.
So it's interesting because you take that data and you flip side it, right? So now you start to understand offensively, how do I combat that? Okay, so I guess another metric would be, and it's probably out there, and I don't know about it, but the team that puts the ball in play the most with two strikes, what's their winning percentage? You know, how does that work? Or the team that puts the ball in play with no outs and a man on third, with one out and a man on third, two outs with a man on third. You know, those would be some interesting statistics to see. Okay, now offensively, this is where the pitchers are going. They're commanding the zone. What am I going to do to defend it? There's a lot of pieces. And one of the things I want to ask you, Bob, is, you know, now that you sit up there, you know, what do you see that's missing from the game? What do you see that's actually just kind of vanished from the game? You know, we watch the big league game, right? And there's a lot that's disappeared from that. You know, the stolen base, the hit and run. I mean, it's almost like watching baseball at the MLB level now for me. I used to enjoy watching from opening day to the end of the season, right? But it's become like the NBA. Like, you go through the motions, and then you get to the playoffs, and then we're going to play baseball. Then we're going to hit and run. Then we're going to bunt. Then we're going to move guys over. You know, so there's a lot of pieces that are almost extinct from the big league game. What do you see in the college game that's disappeared?
So here's what's crazy. You've made all the points. You're right on. But look at the big league game and look at the champions over the years, over the last few years. Look at who really wins the whole thing. The teams that don't strike out. And then they strike out a lot of guys, but they don't strike out. I'm going to tell you right now, like the programs and the big league teams that think they can just slug and strike out, that doesn't work. You've got to slug, and like you said, Shafe, you've got to put the ball in play to win. I'll just give you an example. Arkansas right now, number one team in the country, by the way. They're number two in the SEC, slightly behind Kentucky. They're plus 58 in K difference. So they're in the plus. Most teams, now in contra, Missouri is in last place in the SEC. They're minus 57 in K difference. Okay. I talked to Nate Thompson last week about this, and I said, why is your OTZ number so well? Why do you own the zone? He goes, our hitters don't strike out.
Yeah.
They don't strike out. Now, they wanted to know, he every week he could, you know, hey, what is our number? What's our number? I talked to Runes about this before this morning, actually, Mike Rooney at ESPN, and actually last year going into the tournament, Arkansas was a little bit of a smoke and mirrors situation because they were middle of the pack in their OTZ number in the SEC, and they were 70th overall last year nationally. Did they go to Omaha? No. This year they're number one, okay, overall, and they're number two in the SEC. So I'm telling you, these numbers, and I think if you hit it on the head, it's putting the ball in play, which creates pressure, which is old school. People say, oh, you can just strike out 15, 14 times a game.
No.
I mean, there's only 27 outs, right? So that's those are zeros for me, right? Those are zeros. And you know, playing infield, Shafe, you still got to make the play.
See, that was my next point. That was right. My next point. So the pressure is if you extend innings through errors or walks to hitters that put balls in play, and you're giving them more chances to beat you just by putting the pressure on the defense, right? As an infielder, I mean, it's, you know, playing behind Randy Johnson for 3 years was one of the toughest things I ever did in my life, because we was constantly men on base, you know, double play situations, cutoffs, relays, right. Total anticipation going on. But if you're coming against a team that, you know, all of a sudden you got two strikes and you see somebody go up on the knob a little bit, you see somebody spread out a little bit, and they just grind out the at-bat. Either they put it in play, they get a base hit, or they get a walk. Tough team to beat, man. You know, and then you parlay that with the guys that you're talking about in the OTZ that are pounding the strike zone. It's logical. And it's not 50 million metrics. It's not spin rates. It's not velocity. It's not downward plane. It's none of that stuff. It's basic baseball that's been for 150 years.
Right. And the game has not changed in that if you want to win championships. Now, if you want to lead the country in slug and go 500 and strike out a lot, fine.
Sure.
But you're not going to go where you want to go unless you have a high OTZ number. It's just not going to happen. And that's what we're finding out. The best teams in the country, they're not even Steven to their opponents.
Right.
And then just flip a coin whether we're going to win or lose. They're not. They're dominating their opponent in strikeout, walk, HBP. Because college baseball is about getting hit by baseballs too, by the way. And Todd, you know what I'm talking about. Like college baseball, you hold your ground, you move, but you roll. Yeah. And the top teams all get hit by baseballs.
Right.
Not like the big leagues where they jump out of the way. And then slug. If you dominate in those four – what I've been seeing over the last, you know, gosh, we're not even looking at what, 9 months or so, 10 months. You will win at a high level. And I mean, some of the top coaches in the country, and I will name drop here a little bit, Tim Corbin, Jay Johnson, Kevin O'Sullivan. You know, I can go on and on. Tom Walter, Brian O'Connor. I mean, these guys are getting this on the weekly, and I can go further. Rob Vaughn at Alabama. I mean, I can go way deeper into this text message every week saying, hey, where are we at? You know, thank you. And, you know, we're hoping it grows into something really cool for not just at the college game, but I believe it could go to the big league game, which they're doing stuff like that. They've got all the Ivy League guys in the office. Yeah. I'm not an Ivy Leaguer or anything like that. But these are the simple, basic, like you say, Shafe, foundations of
winning
baseball games.
Yeah,
giving yourself a chance to win more baseball games.
Right. Well, so that's the part I can't see it. I hope it does. Right. You hope the big league game goes back to it, but that doesn't increase contract money. You know what I mean? Slugging percentage, yeah. Home runs, strikeouts. That's what people are paying on. People aren't paying on
right.
Money. You know, and that's the sad part about the big league level, because it's become entertainment. Right. It's not become like that. You know, it's not become a grind to, you know, your team's going to go to the championship. It's all about, you know, it's taken the game. And I understand it, because football's done this. It's taken the game to the layman, the person that really doesn't understand the game, that understands strikeouts and home runs, doesn't understand situational baseball, doesn't realize there's 12 million scenarios that can take place in the game.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's sad. But I don't want to box Andrew out, because I know Andrew's over there. He's got to have questions, Andrew. What do you got, man?
No, yeah. I mean, as far as the OTZ, I mean, one first question, how can they find it?
Well, Coach Mo, it's Coach. You got my semi-social up there, right? _ Mo 25. Coach _ Mo 25 on X and on Instagram. And I post all kinds of videos from pitch grips, you know, with Chase Burns a couple weeks ago, Nick Kurtz with his hitting approach couple weeks ago. AJ Causey with his pitch grips at Tennessee. I know Kavar's tears. I mean, we went through the whole. Everywhere I'm going to do a game, I'm interviewing these guys, and you know Tony and Mike and Oak and Walt. These guys have been so cool of giving me access. Say, hey man, just do whatever you want. Let's grow the game of college baseball. And so yeah, so that's it. I'm just throwing some stuff on there and trying to get the good word out and make the game better, hopefully, and help people and. I just love the game, you know.
And I mean, secondly, do you see a correlation or a difference, especially with these big programs playing these midweeks? What it could be against a lower opponent or a higher opponent? Is there a difference in how they approach or their approach to pitching in those games?
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw this. You guys mentioned it in your intro. Last night there were several upsets. Excuse me, I wouldn't call them upsets, but the nationally ranked teams go down by an unranked team. But you look at four of those teams that won games yesterday are in the top 50 in OTZ. So William & Mary is one of the top OTZ teams in mid-major baseball. Samford is in the top 50. Upstate beat Clemson. They're 50th in the country in OTZ. These are not flukes. These are actual teams that they fill the strike zone up. They prevent slug. They do the things to win baseball games, so they got a better chance. But to answer your question, midweek-wise, I've been there on both sides. You know, I've been at the mid-major side playing those games, and I've been at the ACC level, you know, the Georgia Tech level. You know, you're number one in the country. You just swept Miami over the weekend, and on a Tuesday you're playing Western Carolina. It's tough, man, because – you just went through the war on the weekend, and now Western Carolina is playing on the nicest field they've played on all year, and they're ready to go. And
about the bad boys, though, I'll tell you what.
Oh, they would kick our ass, man. I'll just tell you straight up, man. Todd Raleigh did a fantastic job, and they'd come in, and had guys like Alan Beck and people like that would come in there and play really well. So it's a tough dynamic, man, the midweek versus the weekend.
Yeah.
Like you guys said in the intro, it's a one-game deal. It's hard to really get a handle on what teams do really well and what teams don't. I know Hoodie said he's struggling with his midweeks until they, you know, the last two midweeks they've won.
Yeah, Calvin's really done a good job for them. Yep,
they're doing really well on the weekend, and now they're starting to get that going on the midweek. So,
yeah,
I don't know if I answered your question, Andrew.
A little bit of struggle last week, with the Friday night and the Saturday guy, but they pulled it off and didn't get swept at home, which was, and I didn't think player for player that, you know, they were facing a better team than they were. Just, you know, the consistency at the college level is interesting, especially midweek to the weekend.
Yeah.
It's been an enjoyable thing to watch. And it's, and again, you know, we talked about the portal and all that other stuff. You know, what keeps kids interested is winning. You know,
if
you're there winning and everybody's flying out of the dugout after a win like last night, you know, it's
right.
It shakes. But if you're not playing and you're losing, then kids are just going to go in a different direction in their heads. And,
100%. I was going to tell you, I have the CAA OTZ numbers right in front of me. If you want to,
sure.
You said sure. College of Charleston has a 3.4 OTZ. So their 3.4 is, you know, closer to – UNC Wilmington has an 8.8, so it's a 9 to a 3.4. So they've been filling up in – this is just conference play now. This is not overall. This is just conference play. And that's why, you know, they're – it's such Wilmington's 2 in the league. The number one team who's leading the league also has, shocking, the best OTZ, 10.1.
Yeah, is that Northeastern?
Which is Northeastern. And yeah. Northeastern is, you know, in the top 50, I believe. Yeah. In the country.
So interesting. So what's Northeastern's number?
10.1.
And UNCW is
8.8.
And they're going to play each other this weekend. So I got to watch this. So
now that's a battle. Here's what I always say. If
what's the differential in there? What's
here's what
what's
I here's what I've seen over.
Yeah, what's that? If what's that piece?
If it's
in
less
there,
than three. Okay. If it's less than a three of value. Okay, the value is less than three. It's pretty much a toss up. Take the home team. For the series.
Wow.
Okay, but if it's greater than three, that OTZ team usually comes out on top. I mean, in league play. Now, overall, if you're playing non-conference or weak opponents and you've got a huge OTZ and you're playing different – once you get into league play and you're playing head-to-head and you've played a lot of the same people for, you know, weeks, then it becomes super accurate.
Hey, Bobby Moe will be sponsored by FanDuel next week.
Well, I keep telling her, but I tell my wife, I was like, man, I should have gone. I'm not coaching anymore. I'm not a gambler, but
you're like Jimmy,
I should have gone to Vegas.
Man. Like, you know, he put the glasses on and he went to a different world on us.
I should have gone to Vegas last year. Eight for eight for the Super Regionals. Are you kidding me? Should have
a Sirius XM commercial right there.
From the mountain to the desert. Back and forth.
Oh, I know. I mean, the SEC right now, Kentucky, just to give you, looking at it again, Kentucky's one, Arkansas's two. They both lead their divisions. Kentucky's 12.1. That's one of the top in the country, by the way. If you get over a 10, I mean, that's like Omaha elite.
Where is it? This, are you posting this list somewhere? Or is this
will be posted later today. The SEC and the ACC.
On your social media.
Yes. We just got these at about 7 a.m. this morning and started working on some of the numbers and breaking down the conferences and stuff, because we're just getting enough data to break the conferences down. And this is when it gets really fun. But, I mean, Arkansas is at 11.3. Kentucky's at 12.1. Now, the third place OTZ team is 6.6. So look at how much Kentucky and Arkansas are dominating. And their records show it, too. Their records are way above everybody else in the SEC right
now.
What's
the highest number, Bobby? What's the highest number you've come across so far overall? Like,
for a whole season. Yeah. Ooh. Well, earlier in the season, it just gets crazy because there's so few games. So we modify it and we try to project it out to a 60-game deal or a 56-game deal. And somewhere around the 16-ish, really early, which is crazy. But if you're looking at a season last year, Wake Forest led the country last year. And I think they led the country at around a 12 for the entire season. That is amazing. And then I think in the league last year, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like 10.9 in the ACC, which is total domination. Total domination. Think about it. You're 10 points higher per game, whatever your OTZ value means, than your opponent going into battle. So you're going to have less traffic. You're going to slug more. You're going to have less plays defensively for your club because you're striking out a lot of guys. I mean, you're putting pressure on your teams. It's a no-brainer. You could look at the regionals too. We were 11 out of 16 in the regionals, by the way, in predicting with OTZ, 11 of 16. In the first year of doing it. And we've modified a little bit and we've made it a little more accurate this year. We have a little modification that we added that I feel like is even better. So yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, man, you guys got anything else?
That was awesome, Bobby. Yeah, we really appreciate it. That was amazing.
Appreciate you guys.
This was great. This information was good. The journey's been phenomenal, Bobby. Yep. The friendship's been, been great. And, this is we really appreciate you taking the time. We're going to track this and bring you back on with us towards the end of the season at some point, just to kind of, because this is the stuff right there. That again, it's not overcomplicated. It's logic.
Maybe a once a month little 5-minute update on the OTZ or something like that.
Presented by FanDuel.
And Todd comes out of the financial industry, so we want to know when the IPO is going out.
Yes.
We're in, baby. We are in.
If you guys have any suggestions, let me know. Hey, I'm retired, man. I literally just turned 59 and a half, so I can just start taking some of that money out of my retirement without getting dinged by the IRS. So. Yeah, awesome. Man. That sounds good, Todd, Andrew, Jay. You guys are unbelievable.
Thanks, Bobby, thank you, man, so much. Awesome. We appreciate the time, and we will do this. We're going to get an update as we go along. We'll tap you in, and we'll go from there, man. So thank you. Appreciate it.
I just want to say one more thing. Blessing for being on this show, and I don't know Todd and Andrew like I know Shay. Shafe, I do have to say this in front of everybody, man. You're one of the best people in the game. No question about it. You've treated me just so kind, such respect all the years I've known you. And you played for the White Sox, which is my club. So, you know, that's why I loved you back in the day. Right. So, but no, I have to, can't say enough about you. Okay?
Thank you, man.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate thanks, the Bobby. Words. We appreciate having you, Bobby. All right, man. Cool. See you guys.
Thanks, Bobby.
All right. So, God.
That was great.
That was
a lot. That was a lot of information, but awesome information. I mean, that's great.
I didn't even want to watch the clock on that one. And we had to exceed the number, didn't we?
But yeah, we're an hour and 15.
That was really phenomenal. That was and what a personality, right?
Yeah.
What a good guy. So now
awesome.
Now I'm going to have to get a schedule and just watch those games on ESPN+.
Yeah, that's it. Listen, the proof's there. I mean, I'm going to 100% I'm going to be looking at that. You know, I mean, if that is a baseline of how teams win ball games, I mean, that's kind of groundbreaking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's amazing. And then again, I'm going to be curious because, you know, we're throwing out the offensive side of it, watch him come back with all those metrics, because to me, that's a big piece. I see so many strikeouts in college baseball.
Yeah.
Right. And again, I see no change in approach. And that's because it's not been taught. And that, you know, I threw out a post before we got on today. It's something I did, you know, that guy thing that I'm messing around with and having fun with. But, you know, two things that are missing in the game that have disappeared for me. One is playing pepper. I mean, I grew up playing pepper.
Yeah.
Right? You learn barrel control and move the ball around the field. You know, you're asking kids to go the other way. They have no idea how to do it. Right. But if you play pepper your whole life, you understand how to get your hands inside, do whatever. And then the other thing is the two-strike approach. Like, it's just not changing, you know? I mean, there's no grind to it. I mean, it's sad to watch because it's almost you are so deep in a hole with two strikes because you haven't changed anything.
Right.
That, it, you know, your success level is not going to be good with two strikes. So you better hunt early and you better put the ball in play early because if you get two strikes, you're going to be toast.
For the most part, you're at 100%.
For the most part, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see, you know, you take a team that has the high OTZ, and you put them against a team that puts the ball in play with two strikes, how that plays out.
That's right.
Now, you know, pitching is always going to dominate good hitting, right? Good pitching will always dominate good hitting. But and maybe people will get smart and get over this velo thing and start to get the guys that carve up, like the kid that NC State brought in last night.
Sure.
He just slide a change piece, set up the fastball in, and – I mean, had guys chasing pitches out of the zone. It was just, and it was one or two guys. It was two of the guys. All right, man. So right. I got to gear up. I got to like make what do you call it? I got a bunch of fruit, a bunch of candy, a bunch of everything for my kids, man. My grandkids coming in, so I'm excited about that. So you guys good?
Go be hospitable. Good. All right, go.
There you go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, man. Peace out, we guys. We'll see you guys next week on the Shaving Baseball Report.
See you guys.
See ya.
See ya.